onlookers are ordered away as the prison doors are opened wide.
It was the 12th of April, 1900, and the crowds were gathered at Newgate Prison for a rather gruesome event. I, Dr. John H. Watson, have chronicled all the cases of my illustrious friend, Sherlock Holmes. This was something special. The final demise of his arch-rival, James Moriarty.
Edward Woodward as Sherlock Holmes, John Hillerman as Dr. Watson, hands of a murderer, a scaffold.
See where the path of sin lies, the scaffold! When the hangman pulls his lever, the gates to hell will open, and three lost souls will plummet down to the fiery bosom of the devil.
Dense crowds gather round the scaffold. A man sings from sheet music.
The mothers wait for children dear.
At the prison, two police officers ride ahead of a horse-drawn carriage. A Salvation Army woman addresses the crowd. Produced by Robert E. Fries.
Find the light of your own salvation.
I sell my salvation, sister, in this.
An old man totters about, bottle in hand, to the amusement of the crowd. The Salvation Army woman looks unimpressed. A man in an exotic turban appears behind the brass band and surveys the scene.
It's the ropes, the dangling ropes.
The man in the turban sits down on the ground in a corner, a wind instrument in one hand. A gallows scene is enacted at the Punch and Judy show. Four men sit in the carriage. A man in a bowler hat.
Like I always say, Professor, give the people what they want, they'll turn out for it.
The professor looks up, grim-faced.
Spare me your smug philosophy, Lestrade.
Come, Professor. In a minute you'll be bobbing from the gibbet.
The crowds cheer as the carriage appears by the scaffold. Written by Charles Edward Pogue. Directed by Stuart Orme. The carriage door is opened. Bowler-hatted Inspector Lestrade steps out, followed by three men linked by chains and wearing prison uniforms. The professor is the last of these three to step from the carriage and sullenly observes the baying crowd. The crowd surges forward as the convicts are led to the scaffold. The Salvation Army woman.
A Bible for these condemned sinners. Or let them hold them on the scaffold, sir, for the God whom they have shunned in life will be close to them in death.
Lestrade nods, briefly checking inside each volume.
Why not?
God forgive you. And may your death be a lesson to other poor souls. May it bring comfort.
Let's not keep the people waiting!
As the convicted men continue to ascend the scaffold steps, the woman descends. She makes her way through the crowd and selects a good vantage point. The men's chains are removed. As the professor is shoved into position, the turbaned man starts to play. With nooses hanging alongside them, the three convicts' hands are tied behind their backs.
William Perry, in a few moments you will stand before God. Do you have anything to say?
A hood is placed over the first man's head. The priest moves on.
Arthur Wiggins, in a few moments you will stand before God. Do you have anything to confess?
Oh, please. I don't want to die. I don't want to die.
God have mercy on
you. No, no.
I am the resurrection and the life, said the Lord.
The professor slides an object out of the spine of the Bible he holds behind his back. The Salvation Army woman watches the scaffold apprehensively. The professor turns the knife over in his hand. A hood is placed over the second man's head. The professor starts to cut through the rope, binding his wrists.
Oh, no.
James Moriarty, in a few moments you will stand before God. Have you any last words?
Tell Sherlock Holmes. I'll meet him in hell.
Inspector Lestrade raises a hand to his hat. A hood is placed over Professor Moriarty's head, then the noose positioned around his neck and tightened. As all eyes are focused on the scaffold, the man in the turban puts a long metal pin into his recorder. He then raises the instrument to his lips and blows. The pin is ejected and lands in the hangman's neck. His face contorted with pain, the man collapses. The perpetrator retreats hastily. Men from the Salvation Army band then proceed to light grenades and to hurl them onto the scaffold.
It's a diversion!
In the ensuing chaos, the would-be Salvation Army members rush forwards to the scaffold. As Lestrade pulls the lever releasing the trap doors, the men drop, and Moriarty is free.
Where is he?
A young boy spots Moriarty. Moriarty picks his way between the two hanged men and makes his getaway. The Salvation Army band load up their wagon. A large bass drum is rolled up the steps by two men. As a policeman rushes forward, they climb inside, pull up the steps, and set off swiftly. Inside the wagon, one side of the bass drum is removed, revealing Moriarty concealed inside.
On this case for 3 months! The most dangerous and capable villain in the whole of Europe, finally captured at last, and all you have to do is to walk him to the scaffold.
See here, Holmes. In that chaos, anyone could have passed Moriarty a knife. I could check this book myself.
With your usual efficiency, I see.
The young boy.
And when he slashed at me with his blade, I thought I was done for.
Me too. Bombs was going off all over the place.
Everyone was panicking, including the police.
Nonsense.
They was more scared than we were.
Moriarty may have escaped, Holmes, but you have at least crippled his organization.
It seemed to be working very smoothly this morning, Watson. Now I see that even in prison he has been plotting and scheming his evil ways.
You caught him once. You will do again, Mr. Holmes.
Wiggins is right. He cannot match your intellect, old fellow.
Holmes reflects grimly.
He is a genius, Watson. He is a genius. He is the Napoleon of crime.
And you're his Waterloo, sir.
Holmes grins.
There you go, young trooper. Ready for action again.
Wiggins here. There's something extra for you and the lads.
Thank you, Mr. Holmes.
You've done very well. All right, lads, run along. Mrs. Hudson, see them out, will you?
Where are we now, boys? Out of here.
Holmes wanders to the fireplace. Lestrade.
It's only a matter of time before we recapture him. I have 300 men deployed. Every port, every railway station, every public building is being watched.
And how did he send this?
Telegram.
Arrived just before you did.
Name? Long message.
Read it, man. Simply read it.
Isaiah chapter 61, verse 1. My spirit walketh abroad, proclaiming liberty unto the captives, and the opening of prison to them that are bound. Mine enemies quail before me, and the day of my vengeance
is at hand. Yes.
Is at hand.
A cryptic boast.
Holmes snatches the telegram from Lestrade and slams it down on the mantelpiece. He closes a small syringe kit. Lestrade looks sheepishly from Holmes to Watson.
Best get back to the yard.
I see you, Holmes.
Holmes remains in the room, looking pensive.
I didn't think you'd take it well.
No.
I thought you weaned him of the accursed habit.
Painstakingly. It is not yet a habit again, thank God. But the dragon within him is not yet dead. Merely sleeping.
Seeing Lestrade to the door.
I was glad for Sherlock's sake that soon after Lestrade's departure, we had another caller. Holmes? Holmes, old chap.
What is it, Watson?
There's a cab waiting outside from your brother Mycroft. He wants to see you.
Holmes lifts his head slowly from the mantelpiece. A horse-drawn cab passes a sandstone building.
Well, Richard Farrington, how long have you been with my brother?
Oh, almost 3 years now. I've read all about your exploits, sir. In the Strand magazine.
Yes, quite.
Every one.
Watson here is responsible for all that.
Oh. Oh, here we are.
Thank you, Farrington.
Mr. Holmes?
Holmes and Watson arrive at the Diogenes Club. They step down from the cab and walk into the lobby. A uniformed man steps forward.
Good afternoon, Burton. My brother Mycroft is expecting me.
Mr. Holmes, follow me, sir.
They follow Burton up a small flight of steps.
It's hard to believe, is it not, Watson, that some of the brightest minds in the country belong to this club.
What's that, Holmes?
Holmes signals for Watson to be silent. With his stick, Holmes strikes a sign demanding absolute silence. They're in a large, grand reading room. They continue to follow Burton, who leads them across the room and out through a door at one end of the room.
Damn silly idea. A club of the members can't speak to each other.
It was for that very reason that Mycroft founded it.
On a marble staircase.
What do you think of the laboratory?
The slightest idea. Doubtless we're about to find out.
I know Mycroft holds some minor office in the government.
My dear Watson, there are times when Mycroft is the government.
What do you mean Mycroft is the government?
This way, Mr. Holmes.
Burton leads them into a grand room. Mycroft is at a window.
Ah, Sherlock, Dr. Watson. Good of you to come at such short notice.
Voltaire? Collected works, eh? My goodness, Mycroft, it's going to take you a long time to get through these.
You know me, Sherlock. Always been an avid reader. Come here. Come and see. To anyone who wishes to study mankind, this is the spot. Like this fellow on the corner here.
Oh, yes.
They examine the man.
Obviously an old soldier.
Recently discharged from India.
Non-commissioned officer.
Widow, huh?
With a child.
Children, my dear fellow, children.
Children.
This is a little too much.
No, not at all. A man with such assurance and bearing is quite obviously a soldier. His sun-baked skin would suggest that he has recently returned from India.
That he has not long left the service is shown by his still wearing his ammunition boots.
Royal Artillery.
They both look at Watson briefly.
He is in mourning, deep mourning, which shows that he has lost someone quite recently very dear to him. The fact that he does his own shopping, I would suggest, means that it's his wife.
He's bought things for the children. The rattle shows that one of them is still very young. The picture book shows that there's also an older child.
Incredible.
For all the time he's seen me do it, it still fascinates him.
Ah, this is Colonel Booth, our chief of security. He made a suggestion to me the other day that the two of you should work together.
Booth extends a hand.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Now, Europe, gentlemen, is in a state of flux. We are striving for a unified framework of lasting peace and prosperity, but the great powers have created such a tangled web of alliances that any one of six minor states could plunge us into war.
God forbid. It would be a war too horrific to contemplate.
That's why Booth wants you to work with us.
Watson, perplexed, looks at Holmes.
I fail to see the connection.
There has been a leakage of confidential information, which, I am embarrassed to say, appears to emanate from my building.
We've had numerous instances of classified documents going astray.
Three men have died. Our whole intelligence network is in jeopardy. And until our communication channels are made secure, it is certain more good men will be lost.
No. Sorry, Mycroft. This is not for me. I'm sure that Colonel Booth will be successful eventually.
Holmes, perhaps I didn't make myself clear. This is a matter of national and European security.
Perhaps I didn't make myself quite clear. I am merely a civilian detective.
Even so, I think you should consider it.
No.
Booth looks at Mycroft, irritated.
I'm glad to see that once in a while I can still surprise you.
This is a very important matter, especially at the present time. Some particularly sensitive material has arrived this very day.
There is a certain gentleman I have to find.
This is far more important than your pathetic obsession with Professor Moriarty.
I don't think the people of London would necessarily agree with you.
I don't think your fame with the masses alters anything. You always were the black sheep of the family.
Watson.
Watson follows an angry Holmes out of the room. A young man in long coat and bowler hat bounds up the steps of a townhouse and removes a key from under the doormat. He lets himself into the house. Inside, a beautiful young lady with short brown hair is resting on a chaise longue.
Angela? Angela?
In here, darling.
He puts his coat and hat down on the bed, walks over to the chaise longue and squats down beside her. She pouts and avoids his gaze.
You're late.
I'm sorry.
Assistants in Whitehall can't just come and go as they please.
She turns her head toward him, gets up, and walks over to a tray of decanters and glasses.
I hate it when you're late. It makes me think you might not be coming at all.
We had a visitor today. I had to collect him, of course. Great Sherlock Holmes, no less.
Oh?
Yes. Didn't seem very special to me.
She hands him a glass.
Thank you.
Oh, sit down.
Richard complies.
What did he want?
The devil knows. They're brothers, of course, he and Mycroft.
Yes.
He tips his head back.
Oh, God, I've had a terrible morning.
Oh, poor thing. But don't you find it soothing here? So quiet and intimate. Look at the flames flickering there. That solitary glow and the darkness all around. See how the flame dances, up and down, up and down.
He closes his eyes.
So warm, comforting, so peaceful, up and down against the dark.
She faces him.
Richard, open your eyes.
In a trance-like state, he opens his eyes.
At 8 o'clock tonight, there's something I want you to do.
She stares at him intently. Mycroft is sitting at his desk reading. He picks up a magnifying glass and studies a page closely. The double doors to his room are opened.
Colonel Booth, sir. Give a 7:30 meeting in his office.
Mycroft looks puzzled.
I was just passing and I thought I'd walk you down there, Mr. Holmes.
Meeting,
We have to review the Downing Street security roster.
Oh, yes. I confirmed your usual dinner reservation, sir. 8:15.
Good. Won't you join me? Delighted, sir.
Booth looks briefly at Richard before leaving the room with Mycroft.
Time you were going home, young man.
Yes, sir. Just finishing off here.
He never stops working. I don't know if it's ambition or patriotism, but I'm sure you'll be Prime Minister before he's 40.
Mycroft glances briefly at Richard, seated at his desk. Evening. Two white horses lead a cab through quiet, dimly lit streets. The cab driver brings the carriage to a stop, and a short man in a bowler hat carrying a stick gets out, glances briefly at the driver, and walks away hurriedly. As he waits at the roadside, the cab driver looks about him. Richard is seated at his desk, writing busily as the clock strikes 8 p.m. Suddenly, Richard's pen falls from his hand. He gradually sits upright, a strange, distant look on his face. He blinks briefly and gets up slowly from his desk, then walks round to the other side of the desk. He kneels down, opens a cupboard, and removes a long length of thick rope. He carries it out of the room. He proceeds down the corridor in a trance-like state, carrying the rope. The short man in the bowler hat, who had emerged from the cab, stands by a building looking up. From a top-floor window, a length of rope is thrown down to him. The man gives a couple of tugs, then starts to climb upwards, toward the window. Inside, Richard walks back to his office. The man enters the building and walks along a tiled corridor. He looks in both directions before turning left at the end. He then arrives at an open door, and as he looks inside the room, he sees Richard seated at his desk, staring in front of him, entranced. The man walks in, closes the door behind him, and proceeds to Mycroft's office. Mycroft and Booth emerge into the open air.
There's rain about. I've got an umbrella in my office. I'll come with you.
The short man is by a safe.
Now then, my little beauty.
At the roadside, the cab driver looks about him anxiously. The man at the safe turns a knob, listening carefully for changes in sound. He looks startled.
I hope you like this place. Really have a first-rate chef.
Very good.
Always a very good roast.
Good.
Come on.
What?
You're still stuck.
Let me try, sir. Mm. Would you mind?
Not at all.
Booth tries Mycroft's door as the man inside remains by the safe.
It's definitely jammed, sir.
He opens the safe door. Booth. They walk in. The man grabs something from the safe and races across the room with it.
I'll take it, sir.
Booth runs out of the room after the man, who stuffs his plunder into his jacket pocket and races off down the corridor. Mycroft walks into the adjoining office.
Harrington.
His assistant stares straight ahead. Using the rope, the thief lowers himself as quickly as possible back down the side of the building. Booth leans out of the window, pointing a gun. The man reaches ground level and retrieves his stick. As he runs from the scene, Booth, on a small enclosed bridge above, looks down and aims his gun at him. The man escapes. A policeman outside the office building runs off in pursuit. The cab driver chivvies his horses and sets off. The man plunges a knife on one end of his stick into the policeman's stomach and tears away. Farrington is still in a trance. Booth and another officer kneel over the dead policeman in the street. They are joined by Mycroft.
What sort of people would do this, Colonel?
Perhaps we should talk to your brother again, Miss Holmes.
I think it was the inexplicable behavior of young Farrington that persuaded Holmes to take the case.
Traitor. Are you sure he's our man, Colonel? It seems so strange. Farrington's been with me for 3 years.
He's our man, all right.
Don't worry, Mr. Holmes. The Colonel and me will get the truth out of him down at the yard.
Lestrade takes him by the arm.
But perhaps he had suspected all along that his old adversary was masterminding the affair.
Grim-faced Moriarty gets up from his desk and walks slowly toward the cab driver, who stands nervously.
You failed.
There was nothing I could do, Professor. They shot him down not 5 yards from the coach. Must have been half a dozen of them.
Not bloody lightly.
Lying dog.
Stop. You're alive.
No thanks to you, you yellow scum. You took off at the first gunshot. Let me kill him.
I thought he was dead, I swear.
I was right there. I called for you to wait.
Liar!
There seems to be a difference of opinion. Let's discuss this. Rationally. Like gentlemen. Mr. Finch, get us all a cigar from the box on my desk.
Finch looks warily from the desk to Moriarty, who now holds Stubbs' knife. Farrington's sweetheart, standing to one side in a black dress and choker, watches proceedings. Finch moves slowly toward the desk. Moriarty follows at some distance, holding the knife. Finch reaches the desk and draws a large, oriental-style box toward him. The man in the turban, who'd assisted in rescuing Moriarty from the scaffold, watches. Finch opens the box. He sees a snake inside. A split second later, and Finch has been poisoned by the snake. He looks at two drops of blood on his hand and collapses.
I have no patience with failures or cowards, and I will not tolerate disloyalty.
Rot in hell, you filth!
And you, Mr. Stump! Remember that only I punish or reward.
Well!
Farrington.
How many more times? I don't know!
You knew when the messages were delivered. You knew the habits of your superior. When he would leave the office.
Booth.
This is treason, boy.
To say nothing of murder. Constable Evans was a good man.
Murder? I don't know anything about that.
Don't give me that, lad.
Who are you working for?
Mycroft Holmes.
Oh, very funny. You work for a foreign government. We know that already, my lad. Now, which one?
No.
Farrington faces Lestrade, terrified. Stubb presents Moriarty with a small scrolled document he'd taken from Mycroft's safe. Moriarty unrolls it and sees the sheet covered in numbers.
The code.
Mycroft.
Farrington locks up every night. But when I returned with Colonel Booth, my key wouldn't open the door.
Here's the reason why. Sliver of wood. Piece of pencil. Jammed into the keyhole.
Obviously, the thief did not want to be disturbed.
Precisely, Watson. What did he take? Money?
Oh, no. Something far more valuable. An official document taken from this safe, for which I alone know the combination. There. The future gentleman. It is no hollow boast to say that within these papers lies the destiny of the British Empire.
There is. Why steal only one of the papers, I wonder?
I don't know. It was a dispatch from Europe. It only arrived last night. I've not decoded it yet.
Ah, coded messages.
Yes, they're all kept in this safe, and once deciphered, they're burnt.
Who actually sees these messages before they're destroyed?
Well, depending on priority, the Prime Minister, Minister of Defence.
Oh. Is that all?
Yes. Apart from myself, of course.
Goodness, Holmes, now I see what you mean about Mycroft being the government.
So, nothing else was touched in this room, and I warrant nothing else was taken from this room. The raid itself was carried out with such expertise, one can only describe it as admirable. And you, my dear Mycroft, are such a creature of habit that was used against you. After all, it was sheer chance that you came back here for your umbrella. Had that not have occurred, the thief would have remained undisturbed. I take it that you and you alone have the key to this code?
And the agent who sent it, of course.
Of course.
Well, the thief must be apprehended. The message must be retrieved.
Yes, before he breaks the code.
You couldn't possibly do that.
Why not?
I devised it myself.
All codes can be broken, Mycroft. Even yours.
Mycroft walks over to his desk gravely.
There was nothing pleased Holmes more than a chance to admonish his elder brother. Meanwhile, at Scotland Yard, Lestrade and Booth had news for us.
Thank you, Constable.
Holmes and Watson enter Farrington's cell.
Holmes. He's a tough nut, but he's cracking. He's just admitted he's a Bolshevik.
Hello. Probably come to kill the Queen.
The swine.
No, Watson, no, I did not mean that. I merely said it to illustrate that if you, yourself, had to spend 5 hours with Lestrade and Colonel Booth, you would probably say anything they wanted.
I resent that, Holmes.
Colonel Booth, I would like to talk to him alone.
You can talk, but I'll be here.
Booth retreats to one side of the cell with Lestrade. Watson joins Holmes, who raises Farrington's head. Farrington has a bloody lip.
Who is she? The woman you are protecting. Who is she?
I'm sorry, Mr. Holmes, I don't know what you're talking about.
The police did not find this in your desk. But I did.
Watched by Lestrade and Booth, Holmes produces a small round locket on a long chain, which he dangles in front of Farrington, who takes it from him.
She will not do you any good, you know that.
She?
Do you think she will be there when you hang from the gallows as a murderer?
I'm not a murderer.
If she does not speak up for you now, you are a dead man. Not only dead, but disgraced. Hanged as a traitor to your country.
I would give my life for my country.
Farrington, you will not give your life for anything. They will take it.
Holmes glares at Lestrade and Booth, then back at Farrington, who is deeply distressed. He closes his eyes, then opens them.
Her name is Angela. Baroness de Vere. She's married, you see, to a high-ranking diplomat.
Holmes, Watson and Lestrade are on a residential street.
She rented a house just off the Strand.
Holmes, how on earth did you know he was having an affair with a baroness?
All I knew was that he was having an affair with someone. In any case,
Farringdon was not having an affair with a baroness.
He wasn't?
No, he was having an affair with a lady purporting to be a baroness. How can you say that? Because I have a thorough knowledge of titles, both English and European, and believe me, De Vere is not among them.
It looks as though the lady doesn't exist at all, then. As you have seen, Holmes, like the rest of the house, decidedly uninhabited.
Yes, only recently, though.
What do you mean?
Dust, Lestrade.
I don't see any.
Exactly.
Sorry, I'm not following you.
An uninhabited house, Lestrade, would be layered in dust, would it not? This house, no dust. You know, I think that Farringdon may well be telling the truth.
Either he was besotted by this woman's charms and therefore unable to obey his normal instincts, or she was exerting some other influence over him.
I wonder. Hypnosis. The state that Mycroft found him in after the break-in would certainly suggest that.
Holmes reflects.
You're a military man, my dear fellow. What do you make of Booth?
Well, I find it hard to believe that Mycroft's choice of colleague could be suspect in regard to Booth, if that's what you mean. He fought, nearly died for his country. Sepoy mutiny in 57. They gave him the Victoria Cross.
Brave man. Brave man.
I have tried every mathematical formula that I... No!
In a rage, Moriarty pushes a collection of papers from his desk and puts a cigar to his lips. Mr. Veer lights it for him.
What news from Europe?
A visitor from Berlin.
Oberstein?
Yes. He'll be here in a few days.
Then we must be sure that we have something to show him.
She sits on his lap and they kiss passionately.
Holmes must be watched even more carefully.
It might be simpler to put a bullet through him.
They kiss again.
You just don't shoot a man like Sherlock Holmes, oh no. His death must be savored. First, he must know defeat at my hands. And then... destruction.
Holmes has made Farringdon talk.
Well, perhaps your hypnotic power over men is not as potent as you had imagined. There are other ways of silencing him.
He removes a pin from her auburn hair.
If you don't object.
Farringdon means nothing to me. I could arrange something.
He grins at her, and their lips meet once more. Moriarty looks round gloomily at his surroundings.
Oh, I hate being cooped up in here. Let me settle things with Oberstein. Then I shall take you away to Paris. To Rome. To Monte Carlo.
We still haven't cracked Mycroft's code.
He pauses in undoing her blouse and looks directly at her.
But I have another solution. I didn't think of it before.
Moriarty gets up from his seat, watched admiringly by De Vere. Mycroft is seated at his desk when Burton comes in.
Come!
All our attempts to trace Farrington's mysterious Angela De Vere had failed. The trail seemed cold. Mycroft returned to his usual routine. It was the calm before the storm.
I see we have yet another acquisition, Burton. This place is beginning to look like the British Museum.
General Summerlee's bestowed on us another of his archaeological treasures, sir.
Yeah, well, it's an excellent example of its period.
I wouldn't know, sir. Can I get you anything else?
One more glass of port to go down well.
Burton withdraws. Mycroft studies a document.
Let's see.
He produces a small snuff box and puts some snuff on the back of his hand. He removes his glasses, rubs his eyes, then cleans his lenses. Suddenly, a figure grabs him from behind, putting one hand over his mouth. His chair crashes to the ground, and his glasses fall down. Below, in the reading room, somebody looks up briefly from a newspaper. Burton enters Mycroft's office, a gloved hand bearing a silver tray with a glass of port. He stops short, and raises an eyebrow on finding that Mycroft is nowhere to be seen.
My brother Mycroft said he'd meet me here. Here is where he'll be.
I've already told you, Mr. Holmes, your brother is not here.
He is not here. He is not at his lodging. He is not at Whitehall.
It doesn't mean anything's happened to him.
On the contrary, my brother Mycroft has a life that runs on rails. The rails run from his lodging to Whitehall to here and back again. It never varies. Were it to vary, one might say it was tantamount to the earth veering out of orbit.
Holmes wanders over to the desk.
His port left untouched from last night. Burton, you did not see my brother leave here last night.
The last time I saw him, sir, was when he asked for a second glass of port. I left him here admiring Cleopatra.
Yes. She wasn't here when I was here last.
You've a keen eye, sir. It came just yesterday.
Did you open it, Burton?
Open it, sir.
It has been opened. Observe the carpet. The nap has been lifted. It was raised by the lid swinging across it, which means, of course, that there are hinges. Excuse me.
He studies the sarcophagus.
Yes, indeed. How very curious.
But anyone might have opened it. Even Mycroft.
I think not, Colonel Booth. I think not.
He opens the artifact.
This was opened from the inside.
A latch on the inside.
Indeed.
Air holes for ventilation.
No. Spy holes for viewing.
What does it all signify?
Surely we don't have to explain it, Lestrade.
Wait a minute. You're suggesting someone popped out of this here thing, overcame your brother and kidnapped him?
Yes. With accomplices, of course.
Accomplices?
Well, it took at least two men to carry this.
No, sir. Three men delivered it.
Holmes and Watson exchange glances.
Well.
What is it, Holmes?
It's a blue clay. London clay. Usually found on the riverbed.
Excuse me, gentlemen. I noticed the same substance earlier, before you arrived. Here, on the carpet. And there's more of the same over here, at the window, you see.
Holmes examines the floor, then joins Lestrade at the window, where there is a stain on the sill.
Footprint. Here left by this window. Carrying Mycroft. Rope ladder. Yes, yes, you see? There, rope burns. So. Long strides. Spy holes set very high. Tall man. 4 inches over 6 feet, at least. An Indian.
Indian?
Note the pointed shoe, and, in the casket, a strong smell of sandalwood. An Indian of great strength and height. Cast your mind back, Watson.
Good God, Holmes. Thuggy.
Indeed.
What's that?
The thugs. Cult of murderers from India. Followers of Kali, goddess of death. Only one person who would use such people today. My brother has been taken by Moriarty.
A mouse is dangled in front of Mycroft's face.
Oh, good morning, Ali Baba.
His Indian captor smiles.
What is it? Good evening.
Mycroft looks around anxiously at his ornate surroundings. He is seated in a huge room with a vaulted ceiling. His captor drops the mouse into a lidded wicker box. Moriarty strides into the room and comes towards Mycroft.
Ah, you will wait. Is there anything that I can get you?
A comfortable chair.
Still, I see it was you who stole Leonardo from the Louvre. Sherlock always suspected it. He'll be glad to know he was right.
Well, of course, he may never find out.
It's the Mona Lisa.
Speaking of finding out, congratulations on your coat.
Giving you trouble?
Completely befuddled.
Befuddled? The man who wrote The Dynamics of an Asteroid? A book that ascends the rarefied heights of pure mathematics? Well, I'm honored.
So befuddled, I even refer to your younger brother's trifling monograph on codes. To no avail.
Big brother's had more experience.
Yes. Well, now you must share it.
I'm afraid you purloined the message before I had a chance to decipher it.
Oh, I'll decipher it. Once you give me the key to your code.
Torture?
I abhor needless violence.
You don't expect me to volunteer the information, surely?
Moriarty leads De Vere into the room and walks her over to where Mycroft is being held captive. She's wearing a long black gown.
Aren't you going to introduce us?
All you need to know is that she has many talents.
They kiss. Holmes and Lestrade are in a cell where a man is hanging.
Has he had any visitors?
No. Only myself and Booth.
At what time was he found?
The night shift discovered him just after 8 o'clock.
What time?
8 o'clock.
Holmes pats Lestrade on the shoulder and walks over to Watson.
The same hour that Mycroft's office was broken into.
Do you think there's a connection?
There must be.
Diabolical. So this Baroness woman made him kill himself with his own belly?
That is what they want us to think, Watson. However, it is awfully difficult, is it not? Even under the influence of hypnotism, for a man to kill himself when he's already dead.
Holmes and Watson are with Booth.
And an old Somerley, filling the place with junk from his expeditions, gave Moriarty the perfect ruse to kidnap Mycroft.
But for what purpose?
But to get the code, of course.
Well, that's certainly one interpretation.
But Mycroft would never decipher the message. He would never betray his country.
Not knowingly, my dear Watson. He would rather die first.
There is another possibility.
What's that?
Mycroft Holmes is a traitor. And his abduction was just a clever trick to throw us off the trail. Furthermore, supporting his kidnap story is simply your way of defending his seditious acts.
Well, that's outrageous. Are you accusing both Sherlock and Mycroft of being traitors?
Forgive me, but it is possible.
You are right to cover every aspect of the case, but I do assure you, you are wrong.
That it is imperative we trace Moriarty. I shall talk with Lestrade.
Lestrade? Capturing Moriarty?
What progress have you made?
Might I remind you, Colonel, that we have only arrived where we are now because of Sherlock's investigations. You yourself suggested that he take this case.
Thank you, Watson. But I am quite sure Colonel Booth was speaking hypothetically when he said that Mycroft and myself might be traitors.
Well, I certainly hope so. Either way, I think an apology is in order.
I remind you, Holmes, this is not only a question of your brother's well-being. This is a matter of national security. In the final balance, even the most patriotic man may weigh his own life before that of his country.
A strange viewpoint from a defender of the Empire, is it not?
Viewpoints change with experience.
Booth swings round to face Holmes.
The coded letter is the important thing, Holmes. Find that, and you'll find Moriarty. And save your brother.
Mycroft, still captive, is seated, his eyes closed.
The key to the code. What is it?
Sherlock. Sherlock's safe.
The key to the code is in your brother's safe.
Brown envelope.
Moriarty and De Vere smile and exchange a glance. Moriarty leads the hypnotist away from Mycroft, whose head is slightly forward. As they withdraw, Mycroft opens his eyes briefly, then closes them again. Holmes is seated in his drawing room, looking pensive.
There's a telegram, sir, from Mr. Holmes.
Thank you, Mrs.
It's just arrived, sir.
Thank you, Mrs. Hudson.
Watson brings it to Holmes.
Read it to me, will you, Watson?
Watson opens the envelope and unfolds the contents.
It's from Lestrade. He wants us to meet him at the yard. He's found the Indian.
Holmes snatches the telegram from Watson and reads.
Get your coat, Watson.
Right-o.
Watson leaves the room. Holmes springs up from the chaise longue and walks over to a drawer where he takes out a small gun and checks it over. He and Watson take a cab.
Where to, gentlemen?
Scotland Yard.
No. Just take us round the square.
Round the square, sir?
Cabby, round the square and back here.
Yes, sir.
The cab sets off. Stubb, having seen their departure, emerges from the shadows of his hiding place opposite and lets himself out through a gate onto the street. He walks across to Holmes's front door. Holmes.
Lestrade would never send a telegram if a hand-delivered message would do. Anyway, if he really had caught the Indian, he'd come and tell me in person. And salt him to the wound. Oh, he knew that I would recognize Lestrade's handwriting. That's why he sent a telegram.
He.
Holmes hands Watson a gun.
Keep that very close to you.
Holmes and Watson arrive back and creep through the hallway to the drawing room, Watson with a gun at the ready. As they enter the room, Holmes sees a figure crouching near the wall.
Well, Jeremy Stubb, I thought I recognised your work on Mycroft's safe. You remember, don't you, Watson? Jeremy Stubb? Until I put paid to his career the finest safe cracker in all of London.
In all England, Mr. Holmes.
All right, Watson!
Stubb wields his stick, emitting the knife with which he threatens Watson. Watson collapses and the gun falls. Before Stubb can grab it, Holmes intervenes and they battle with their sticks.
I heard you'd escaped from Dartmoor.
The climate didn't suit me.
Stubb lunges at Holmes, who crosses Stubb's stick with his own.
Pity! You'll soon be back there. Where is Moriarty?
Never heard of him.
I suppose you organised this yourself, did you?
Perhaps I did.
My dear Stubb, you couldn't organise a game of croquet.
Their fighting moves into the hallway.
Touché, Mr. Holmes.
Just as Stubb thinks he has the upper hand, Watson rallies and shoots the man in the leg. Stubb collapses and rolls downstairs. Watson joins Holmes at the top of the stairs.
What I mean is, Mr. Holmes is always coming up with silly little clues that don't mean nothing. That's how he nicked me the last time. I was innocent then.
Well, born guilty, Stubb, you worthless wretch! Where is my brother?
Let go of me! Get him off me! You keep him off me. I know my rights. He can't treat me like that! I don't have to say nothing.
Holmes walks slowly towards Stubb and leans over him.
If my brother is harmed, in any way whatsoever, I will kill you with my bare hands. As God is my judge.
Stubb knows how I deal with traitors.
Moriarty with De Vere.
He won't talk. But someone else will.
He walks over to Mycroft and deals him a blow across the face.
Don't make a fool out of me.
It seems I already have.
You have a very strong will, Mycroft.
It runs in the family.
Quick, sir. My mistress has got a raging fever. The master sent me in a carriage. It's waiting outside. Please hurry, sir. She's awful bad.
Yes, yes, madam. Come on. It's a medical emergency, Holmes. I'll be back later.
Watson leaves the building. Holmes, wearing a long overcoat, walks downstairs looking thoughtful. In his drawing room, Holmes turns to a small desk, opens a drawer, and quickly stuffs something into his pocket. He walks over to a small chess table and sits down.
Do come in, Professor.
Moriarty comes in.
The stable lad who has just left with Watson is the first I've ever seen with pierced ears. A transparent deception for you, Moriarty.
It served its purpose. To get you alone.
He crosses the room to Holmes.
Ah, this looks like a winning position.
You place your bishop there in three moves, I'll take your black king.
Since you are so obviously armed, you don't need three moves.
Then checkmate.
Oh, well played. But you've overlooked my counter, dear friend. If you want to take the black king, first you must sacrifice a knight and a pawn. Are you prepared for that? Besides, a bullet even from your own gun is not the kind of justice that you seek for me.
Oh, you will face justice. Believe me.
We shall see. I have a proposition for you, Holmes.
He smiles darkly. Holmes studies him intently, then places his gun on the table. He sits back opposite Moriarty, arms folded.
I listen. In the past, I found you diverting. Your opposition providing exciting competition.
I too have had similar thoughts about you, Moriarty.
We're both extraordinary men.
Yes.
We appreciate the aesthetics of the game. But now, things are different.
He picks up the gun, aiming at Holmes.
You change the rules?
Oh, no, Mr. Holmes. I've thrown away the book.
You and I both know that you are not going to pull that trigger. If you were, you would have done it a long, long time ago.
Don't push me. Everything changed when that noose went round my neck. Sometimes the rage I feel towards you overwhelms me.
Holmes puts a hand up and pushes the gun away.
But you're right. Your death in itself is no longer sufficient. But it will come. I assure you.
He replaces the gun on the table.
If you want to see Mycroft again, you will give me the key to his code.
And if I did, you would release him unharmed?
Correct.
How can I trust you?
Do you have a choice? I don't wish to gloat, but you have to admit, my strategy is running like clockwork.
Why are you so interested in this code?
It came to my attention some time ago. But frankly, it was the family connection that induced my participation. It was an added bonus that certain of my European associates expressed a wish to purchase it.
Is there anything you wouldn't sell, Moriarty?
You and I have a lot in common.
He picks up a small syringe from the surface next to him.
Including certain weaknesses. But Mycroft, he's different from you. He's not used to such pleasures.
He plays with the syringe. Holmes gets to his feet.
If he should come to any harm...
That depends upon you.
He replaces the syringe and turns to face Holmes.
The key, Mr. Holmes.
Go to hell, Professor Moriarty.
Moriarty looks at him with hatred.
I shall see you in your grave first.
And Watson, what of him?
I play for King. I only take pawns if they get in my way.
Then it would seem to be stalemate, wouldn't you say?
For the moment, Mr. Holmes. Only for the moment.
Holmes avoids his gaze. Moriarty puts on his top hat, picks up his stick and leaves. Holmes sits down by the chessboard once more. In a series of underground caverns.
Still half asleep.
I can't see.
Come on, we'll guide you.
Where am I? What is this place?
No need for you to know.
Watson is led through various torchlit chambers. He arrives back at Holmes's house. Holmes rushes to the hallway.
Watson, my dear fellow, are you all right?
Took me by surprise. As soon as I entered the carriage, I was cracked over the head. When I came to, I was blindfolded and chained to a post in some kind of underground cavern. I knew it was underground because the air was so dank.
Do you remember anything else?
I don't know. The next thing I recall, I was sitting on the embankment. I hailed a cab, and here I am. But why was I taken?
I had a visitor. Moriarty.
The nerve of the devil.
Yes, indeed.
Holmes lifts up Watson's leg and examines his foot.
What are you doing?
He has made a mistake, Watson.
He takes a sample from the sole of Watson's shoe.
He has made a mistake.
Emil is a chemist.
Oh, good. Because I've got a splitting headache.
An experimental chemist.
Mycroft looks apprehensively at the figure alongside him.
I think this could be rather painful.
Devere steps towards Mycroft. Mycroft's arm is stretched out and held down. As a needle is inserted into it, Mycroft is lying back, his eyes closed.
Open your eyes.
Mycroft complies.
Look at me. The cipher to the message. What is it?
Numbers code. It refers to pages, book.
Page numbers?
What book?
Voltaire, volume 3.
Where is the book?
My office, Whitehall.
Devere and Moriarty smile. A sweep of elegant terraced houses in a crescent. Holmes is holding a syringe. He manoeuvres the needle up and down, then picks up a small file.
I have the papers and the post. Also, the new Strand magazine.
Which of our cases have you so luridly chronicled this time, my dear Watson?
The Adventure of the Engineer's Thumb.
Huh? Oh. Yes, yes, indeed. May I?
He leafs through.
Appropriately accompanied with inaccurate and melodramatic illustrations, I see.
You know perfectly well I didn't vary a jot from the facts.
The facts, as you see them.
He tosses it to Watson.
My dear fellow.
Watson buries himself behind a newspaper. Holmes, standing, raises an arm and undoes a shirt sleeve, which he rolls up.
Morphine or cocaine?
Do I detect a note of disapproval, Watson?
It's just that I've only seen you turn to it to alleviate boredom or inactivity. Never when you were on a case. But perhaps the nature of this case is such you feel your mind needs a 7% solution to clarify it. I much prefer the days of the 3-pipe solution.
Because this business concerns my rival Moriarty and the safety of my brother, I am unable to function with my usual perception. Is that what you think?
No, my dear Holmes, I do not think that. Do you?
Holmes pauses for a moment, smiles, then lowers his arm and pulls his shirt sleeve back down.
My dear Watson, you are right, of course. I cannot risk the loss of my deductive powers with artificial stimulation, especially since without information they are practically wrecked already. Clues, Watson! I need clues! Without the relevant information, my brain is like a racing engine, racking itself to pieces.
Yes, if only we could get some lead from Stubb, some trail to follow that wasn't a dead end.
Holmes puffs on his pipe.
Stop! That's it!
What?
Of course, of course! Why didn't I think of it before? Sometimes, you know, Watson, I'm almost as stupid as Lestrade. But you, my dear Watson, you are more clarifying than any drug. Some people, without possessing genius themselves, have the remarkable power of stimulating it in others. You are such a person, Watson. You are such a person!
He strides away.
Thank you. I think.
Watson, come on, man, come on!
At Scotland Yard.
Yes,
It's an excellent idea, Holmes. I like it.
Actually, it was Watson's idea.
My dear fellow.
That's all right. I still like it. Congratulations, Doctor.
You don't seem to be very enthusiastic, Booth.
If we let Jeremy Stubb escape, how can you be sure he'll lead us to Moriarty?
Moriarty is the only one who can supply money and sanctuary.
How would you arrange it? Forgive me, Holmes, but your methods are known for their irregularity.
My methods may be irregular on occasion. However, it is their effectiveness that is important, would you not say?
You must admit, gentlemen, your own efforts to trace in Moriarty have been abysmal.
Yes. I'm surprised he hasn't called in at Scotland Yard for a word of encouragement, as he did with me.
It would be the last word he had in his life, I can assure you.
Would it really? Good God, man, Moriarty is walking about the street at will. You still can't find him.
Stubb mustn't suspect a trap.
We'll arrange to transfer him.
Nighttime. A policeman drives a small barred police carriage. He turns under an archway.
Whoa!
What's up, lad?
It's me mate, sir. Coach ran him over, it did, sir. He's hurt some awful, he is.
Right, let's have a look then, shall we?
Stubb stares from inside the carriage. He is behind a barred window. The policeman kneels beside a motionless boy.
Is he looking on?
Yes, sir.
Then any time you're ready, lads.
One boy whacks him on the head with a stick. He drops unconscious. Holmes observes from a distance. Wiggins retrieves keys and opens the carriage door.
Hurry up. Professor sent us.
You're a good boy.
Says he's worried to you.
Oh, Stubbs, he won't forget you. That he won't.
There you go.
Handcuffs removed, Stubb runs off. Holmes and Watson step forward.
Wiggins, get off, Holmes. Get off.
Right,
come, gentlemen.
The young boys scamper away. Lestrade and Booth are behind Holmes. Stubb limps down back streets. They shadow him. Stubb descends stone steps. Holmes spots him on the level below and points him out. Stubb limps on. Holmes, wearing a cape and top hat and wielding a cane, leads his posse down the steps after Stubb. They pass under stone archways.
It's Stubb. Come on, hurry.
A prone figure lies on the cobbled street. They scurry over. Policemen join them. The dead man is Stubb.
Strangled.
Hey, you! Stubb!
Going up after him, Watson.
Come on, Lestrade.
See you on the roof.
A man on a rooftop. Holmes climbs a drainpipe, his cape billowing out behind him. Booth indicates the body to the police.
Deal with this.
Yes, sir.
Booth strides off. On a smoky rooftop, the figure looks around. It's the turbaned Indian man. He hastens away. Watson at a door on street level. Holmes sprints across the rooftop, white scarf slung over his shoulder. The Indian man reaches the edge of a roof. He looks down. It's a drop of 10 yards or more. He leaps to another rooftop opposite. He races off past smoking chimneys. Holmes picks his way carefully along a narrow wall. He reaches the roof edge, looks down, and steels himself for a leap. He lands sweetly and continues his pursuit. Backed up by Lestrade and Booth, Watson, now on the first rooftop, spots him from afar. Holmes, his face determined, is closing on the turbaned man. The man leaps onto a sloping roof and scrambles over. He loses his grip and slides down the tiles. Holmes peers over the roof crest. Holmes slides down, landing behind the man, who jumps to his feet and kicks out. Holmes staggers backwards. The man wraps a narrow scarf around Holmes's neck, throttling him. Holmes tosses him down. The man punches out. Holmes punches expertly, sending the man flying. They square off. Booth aims a pistol. The man slumps to the ground, dead. Holmes looked round in surprise to see Watson, Lestrade and Booth on the other rooftop.
Sorry things went badly tonight, Holmes. But even if we'd taken the Indian alive, it's doubtful he would have talked.
Possibly. Whatever we do, it seems that Moriarty knows about it. We've also seen that he's even prepared to sacrifice his own men. I think, you know, in order to safeguard Mycroft's codebook, I should pass it on straight away to the proper authorities.
The codebook? You mean you've had it all along?
I've known of its whereabouts, yes.
Why didn't you tell me or the Colonel?
I am telling you and the Colonel.
Good Lord, Holmes. That was an awful responsibility to take.
Where is the book?
It's in Mycroft's office. Voltaire, Volume 3.
How can that be a codebook?
How indeed, Lestrade, how indeed. Good night, Inspector. Good night, Bull.
Good night.
Night, Holmes.
Come along, Inspector. I'll drop you over the yard.
Walk on.
Holmes.
Yes, Watson?
One thing bothers me.
Only one.
How did Moriarty get wind of our stamp scheme?
Ah, yes. Well, now, here's another one to bother you. How could Colonel Booth, who apparently only has one good eye, shoot the Indian straight through the heart at a distance of approximately 50 yards in bad light with only one shot? And yet, some nights before, at the time of the stolen document, miss Stubb with a number of shots at half the range.
I hadn't thought of that.
Curious discrepancy in marksmanship, is it not? I want you to take that cab.
Of what?
Collect Wiggins, follow Booth.
Don't worry, I won't be far away.
As usual, Holmes was several steps ahead of me. Booth went straight to Mycroft's office after dropping off Lestrade. But whilst he was inside, we saw a mysterious figure approach his cab.
A man wearing a hat, his face wrapped with scarves, takes out a winding tool and applies it to a cab wheel, loosening a bolt. Mycroft's office building. Booth emerges to find his cab still waiting, driver holding his whip ready. Booth gets in and wraps his cane against the door.
All I want.
The two horses pull the carriage away. Watson and Wiggins watch from another carriage. A clock reads 8 o'clock. Booth's driver jumps down to wrestle with the loose wheel.
Loose wheel, sir. 1 minute.
Booth climbs out, while the driver busies himself with the wheel. Booth looks around impatiently and raises his cane. Another cab halts in front of him, and he clambers inside.
Where to, sir?
The south side of Southwark Bridge.
Got you, Watson.
The replacement cab trots off. Watson and Wiggins watch from their cab.
Come on.
Watson's cab traverses murky city streets. Booth climbs out of his cab in a deserted lane.
You sure this is the place you want, sir? It's a dangerous place around here, you know, for a gentleman.
Yes, that's all right, thank you.
Aren't you, sir? Thank you.
The wrapped-up cab driver resembles the man who nobbled the first cab.
Wait here.
Walker!
The bespectacled cab driver drives off. Watson and Wiggins disembark and march briskly over to the spot where Booth got out. They turn a corner and peer after him.
Quickly, Wiggins, back to the cab. Fetch Holmes and Lestrade and bring them here.
Right.
Wiggins hastens away back the way they came. Booth strides purposefully down the lane. Watson's shadow appears on a wall behind him. Watson follows. Booth approaches large wooden doors set under stone arches. Watson scans around. Watson, in coat and top hat, peers round a narrow alleyway. A man wielding a gun appears behind him.
Governor.
I thought you might need this.
The wrapped-up cabbie.
I thought of joining you earlier. And then I thought, no. A little reconnaissance would be wiser.
I sent Wiggins after you and Lestrade. What is this place?
That church is on the site of the old Southwark Friary. Directly underneath the church, there is a tunnel system where I found a certain amount of blue clay.
But that place has been derelict for years.
A carriage turns the corner into the lane. Watson and Holmes check it and retreat into the shadows. Under their curious gaze, the carriage halts. A caped figure in a top hat emerges.
Look.
The mysterious man walks toward the wooden doors that Booth went through before.
Come on.
The carriage drives away. Holmes and Watson stride toward the wooden doors. Flaming torches illuminate a large underground area with stone arches. They creep through it cautiously, scanning around. Holmes raises his arm and they halt. Holmes is looking at the ground.
A pointed shoe again.
And they say dead men don't talk.
Holmes's gloved hand points to fresh footprints in the mud.
I believe this is where I was tied up.
Well, they took you out. Have you any idea which...
The sound of footsteps behind them. They slink under an arch. A mustachioed man in a flat cap holding a flaming torch walks on by. Holmes and Watson reappear, looking after the man. They follow him. The man sets his torch in a holder on a wall and passes through a door. Watson knocks out the doorman. They enter.
14.
Devere reads from a book. Booth has no eye patch.
M. 269.
17.
Moriarty lurks, smoking a cigar.
S.
267. 2.
She turns a page.
S.
Colonel Booth here saved us valuable time by providing the relevant copy of Voltaire. No doubt, this will be an explosive little document.
Hmm? You have done our country a great service, Professor.
Believe me, it was a personal pleasure.
Hand out! All passages covered!
Lestrade and several bobbies with torches under the arches.
Well?
This doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't.
Moriarty snatches the paper from Booth and examines it. Cloaked Herr Oberstein watches Moriarty closely. The foursome are in an elegantly furnished room.
Bring me that damned Mycroft.
It seems, Professor, that I have wasted my journey.
I can assure you, Herr Oberstein, this will only take but a moment.
It is not just a question of money. If you cannot decode this message, then I will have to inform Derwin immediately.
Don't threaten me, Oberstein. I'm perfectly aware of the situation.
Mycroft is led along a corridor by two thugs pinioning his arms.
You don't have to correct me, I'm coming.
Lestrade and three uniformed policemen stride past stone arches. Watson wields a handgun. He and Holmes creep up a carpeted staircase in Moriarty's hideout. Oil paintings adorn the walls.
Prepare to leave. Now, listen to me, Mycroft Holmes.
Don't make a fool out of me. It seems I already have.
Moriarty stands over Mycroft, who has a rope round his neck.
You have made me extremely impatient. I am going to count to five.
And if you don't give me the correct key to the code, then we are going to throttle you. Do you understand? One, two, three, four.
Go, go to hell!
Holmes watches from above.
Five.
Is it the code you're looking for, Moriarty? If anyone moves, please shoot them, will you?
With the greatest of pleasure, Holmes.
What delightful rooms you have here, Moriarty.
Watson trains a gun.
And how very good of Colonel Booth to lead us to them. Ah. Minus his bogus eye patch, I see.
Yes, as bogus as his phony patriotism.
I knew if I told him about the code book, he would bring it straight to you. Of course, the one you have is a decoy, which I had substituted. The real one is still in my chambers. I must say you do keep excellent company, Moriarty. Herr Oberstein, master of European espionage. And I do believe Miss Sophie de Vere, one-time favorite ingenue at Drury Lane. Until, of course, the great scandal with a certain married prince, which ended her rising career. Moriarty, release my brother.
One can tell the measure of the man by the company that he keeps.
Yes, indeed. Villains all. Eh, Booth?
Yes. You of all people. How could you?
How could I?
Moriarty has a gun.
Watch 40 years of degeneracy shrink the Empire to a pale shadow.
I've seen brave men, friends, die in every corner of the globe on the whim of some fool from an office in Whitehall. Men like me have stood by for too long. This country needs new leaders.
I think we've had enough of your half-baked ideology, Booth. It really is quite simple. You are a traitor to your country and the murderer of Richard Farrington.
The old order changeth, Holmes. This game is not over yet. Would you be so kind?
Mycroft rises and walks toward the door at gunpoint.
I think for you the game is over. I would point out that Watson is an extremely good shot and still has his revolver pointed in the general proximity of your heart.
If he has one.
Now that depends, Dr. Watson, if you're speaking scientifically as a physician or romantically as a writer.
Ah, you have a literary devotee, Watson.
Oh, I enjoy a cheap penny dreadful every now and again.
The critic, too.
He forgets the author has a gun.
The critic, too.
An ignominious end, surely, Moriarty. Shot for giving a bad review.
Oberstein pulls out a gun. Watson shoots him. Moriarty pistol whips Mycroft to the ground. De Vere rolls a wicker basket, and a snake flops onto the carpet. It slithers toward Mycroft.
Don't move.
Booth grabs Oberstein's gun. Moriarty leads De Vere away by the hand. He opens a door, stairs leading down. Booth takes pot shots at policemen who race in. One policeman drops. Booth sprints from the room and follows Moriarty down the stairs. The Cobra rears up at Holmes, Watson and Mycroft lying cowering on the floor. Lestrade takes aim and blows its head off. On an easel, the Mona Lisa.
Lestrade, take care of my brother.
Holmes and Watson set off after the villains, Watson holding his gun at the ready. They trot downstairs. In the basement, De Vere, in an elegant frock, clambers up the wall to an escape tunnel.
Wait for me at the top.
Still holding a gun, Moriarty checks the direction he came from, strikes a match on a wall, and kneels down to light a fuse. Lestrade helps an exhausted Mycroft into an armchair. The fuse burns down, Booth runs into the cellar, and a shutter covering the escape tunnel is slammed in his face. His face drops when he sees the burning fuse. The fuse is attached to an ornate pot. The basement is filled with smoke. The figure of Watson appears.
Holmes! Holmes! Sherlock, where are you? Holmes!
A newspaper headline reads, Sherlock Holmes dead.
Life, saith the Lord. He that believeth in me, though he were dead,
yet shall he live. And whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die. Amen. The Lord is my shepherd.
The Lord's my shepherd, I'll not want.
Holmes in bearded disguise among the mourners. Moriarty, disguised as an old man, steps from a wheelchair holding a wreath. Holmes watches. Holmes handcuffs Moriarty as he lays the wreath.
You said you would see me in my grave. It's good to see that you are a man of your word. But then, of course, I anticipated no less.
They exchange smiles.
Well, did you anticipate this, Mr. Holmes?
He points a handgun. Holmes's face drops. De Vere aims a gun. Lestrade shakes his head at an armed undercover cop in a tree.
Nobody move, unless you want to put a real body in this coffin.
Holmes has his hands raised.
It seems we both mistook this funeral for a masquerade ball. But since you've so obviously bound us together, perhaps you'll be kind enough to accompany me on a short carriage ride.
Sporting fake grey whiskers, Moriarty holds a gun to Holmes's head. De Vere, looking boyish, all in black, trains a pistol on the assembled mourners. Still handcuffed to Moriarty, Holmes walks at gunpoint. Lestrade looks on helplessly. The priest is bemused. The trio leave the mourners in the graveyard. Lestrade indicates with his eyes, and the policeman in the tree disappears from view. Carriages are lined up by the church. Wiggins and the other urchins watch nervously as Moriarty, Holmes and De Vere reach a carriage. Holmes rips off his fake beard.
I could shoot you now, Holmes. I may just need you. Your friends were to catch up. After you.
They climb in. De Vere takes the driving seat. Red hair flowing, De Vere lashes the two horses with the reins as they gallop away. Watson and Lestrade pile into an open carriage and set off in pursuit. Moriarty's carriage hurtles along a country road, De Vere at the helm. Inside, still handcuffed to Holmes, Moriarty removes his fake grey facial hair. Watson has his gun ready.
Hurry up! Do you by any chance have a key?
Of course.
He holds up a key. He drops it.
Why don't you pick it up, Holmes? And be careful. Because my gun is right next to your head.
Holmes leans forward slowly. The carriage jolts over a log, and Moriarty is knocked sideways. Holmes kicks the key away and lunges at his captor. They struggle, eyes locked on each other.
For God's sake, hurry!
De Vere lashes the horses again. Holmes and Moriarty wrestle inside, their faces tensed, straining. Moriarty's gun is pointed upwards, Holmes gripping his wrist. De Vere is shot in the shoulder and slumps across the seat. The horses continue galloping onward. De Vere lies motionless. A bolt holding the carriage to the horse's harness is working loose. Their hands smash down on the jagged, broken carriage windowpane. The gun drops from Moriarty's hand. He slaps Holmes, who falls half out of the door. Moriarty throttles Holmes, who is lying half out of the carriage, his head at wheel height. The bolt is jerking itself freer and freer. Moriarty's face is a mask of hatred. Holmes is heading straight for a pile of logs by the side of the road. His face contorts with fear. He grabs Moriarty's face. Holmes pulls himself inside as the carriage door shears off. Moriarty is still throttling Holmes, who is again half out of the carriage. Lestrade and Watson drive past the battered carriage door. Holmes presses the handcuff chain against the carriage wheel. Sparks fly. Moriarty looks concerned. The bolt holding the carriage to the horses rattles ever looser. De Vere is still slumped unconscious. The chain sparks against the rapidly revolving wheel as the carriage hurtles through parkland past a stone monument. De Vere stirs, clutching her shoulder. The bolt drops out. The horses run free of the cab, which veers off down a grassy slope. Moriarty throttles Holmes. The chain sparks on the wheel. A chain link breaks, the chain snaps, and Moriarty flies backwards into the carriage, which trundles towards a lake. Watson's carriage halts. Holmes leaps out and rolls down the slope as Moriarty's horseless carriage hurtles downhill, De Vere still slumped atop it. Moriarty's face contorts in terror. The coach tips into the water at high speed and somersaults. Holmes slumps unconscious.
Holmes, old man.
Watson rushes to take his pulse. The waters of the lake are calm, reflecting mellow evening light.
The police dragged the lake for some days. Didn't, however, recover the bodies. The coach, but not the bodies.
That lake is fathoms deep. The current probably washed them away.
Let us hope so, my dear friend.
Holmes, how did you know the code book was the Voltaire?
Well, my brother Mycroft hated French at school, so I knew perfectly well that he would never read 6 volumes of Voltaire. Not for fun, anyway.
They arrive at Mycroft's club.
Who is this fellow you're supposed to be?
Mycroft simply said that somebody from the government wanted to offer their congratulations. It's probably some visiting parliamentary nabob seeking re-election. Shall we go, Watson?
Yeah. Mycroft greets them in the lobby.
News is arriving daily. 15 Serbian royal guards arrested. German spy ring broken in Paris. Yeah. I know you hate these things, Sherlock, but you are quite the hero.
Oh, please, Mycroft, please.
Well, do try to be civil. It took some doing to arrange this reception here. The members weren't too keen on it. After all, it's the first time a woman's been allowed in the place.
A woman?
Holmes has his arm in a black sling. The uniformed guests part to reveal Queen Victoria sitting at the end of the room.
Even Holmes was taken aback. Who could have guessed that Her Majesty was his biggest fan?
Holmes approaches the Queen. ITFC audio description.